speaker is one of our greatest investigative journalists, Michael Crick, began when Channel 4 News began and then went to work on Newsnight. He's written biographies of a wonderful combination of people, Arthur Scarville, Jeffrey Archer, Michael Heseltine, Alex Ferguson, and Michael Howard. Many of you might have read his very touching tribute to his old English teacher at Manchester Grammar School, Peter Farker, who was played so brilliantly by Timothy Spall in The Sixth Commandment. And his latest book is One Party After Another, The Disruptive Life of Nigel Farage. Ladies and gentlemen, Michael Crick.
Harry, thank you so much for that incredibly generous introduction. I'm told that this is the room, I'm told by David, who's now left, that this is the room where, way back in 1904, on the day that Winston Churchill defected from the Conservative Party to the Liberals, he came here and he was feted and showered with champagne. So, a pretty appropriate place to be discussing Nigel Farage, perhaps. And it was wonderful listening to Cleo, because she was talking about how her book is a political bonk buster. And in a way, so is mine. But more of that later. But I don't have the problem of trying to make a dull man fascinating. Farage is not a dull man. Whatever you think of him, he is not a dull man. There is not a dull man and not a dull moment in Nigel Farage's life. Now, his politics are not mine. I voted Remain. I think that Brexit has been a total disaster. I don't think... Interesting there, about 50-50, I'd say. I don't think that Nigel Farage is a racist. But I do think that he is, and I've said this in the book, I do think that he is guilty of pandering to racism and racists, which in some ways is just as bad. And I think that his adulation of Donald Trump is utterly bonkers and one has to seriously question his judgment of character. But I get on with it. And I do think that Nigel Farage is the most influential politician of this century so far. Okay, we've only been going 23, 24 years. But I think he has actually done more than all of those people who've been Prime Minister and held high office. I mean, it's quite remarkable that this man, in 2014, led a minor political party to victory in a nationwide election. And then in 2019, he did it again, leading a different party, the Brexit Party. So he's done it twice. This is a man who not only, I think, put the pressure on the Cameron government to have a referendum, to deal with the whole issue of Europe and so on, which eventually led to the result of the disastrous result, in my view, of 2016. But also subsequently, he helped change the whole nature, the whole geography, the whole demographics of elections in this country, at least for a while. The jury's out on that. Farage, through the Euro elections in 2014, then the referendum, he spotted the disaffection, the disillusionment amongst working class Labour voters with the Labour Party. Up until the time that Farage became leader, UKIP had been a sort of home counties golf club, retired colonels kind of party. He put a lot more focus on the disaffection in working class areas, what we now call the Red Wall. And bit by bit, in those various elections, he dislodged the bricks in that Red Wall, so that eventually millions of former Labour voters in 2019 finally thought that they the time was for them to vote Conservative and, of course, return Boris Johnson. And it's my view that if you look back on modern history, there are not many politicians who have changed the weather. And certainly not many politicians who've changed the weather without holding great offices of state. I mean, maybe Joseph Chamberlain, maybe Alex Salmond. Certainly, I'd put Farage in that group. And in Farage's case, It's all the more remarkable in that he has never been a Member of Parliament. He's tried 7 times and failed 7 times, and he will never be a Member of Parliament. And yet he has achieved a hell of a lot. You may not like it, but he has, in his terms, achieved a hell of a lot. Now, people say, you know, why write a book about Farage? And that's part of the reason, that this man is hugely important. Nobody else has written a book. I should have started it 5 years before, 5 or 10 years before, but I kept thinking somebody else was doing it. But the great thing about Farage, is that, as I said earlier, he's never dull. There's always some twist and turn in his life. You know, he's written 2 of his own memoirs. They're not entirely accurate, and that's all part of the fun of it. Testing what he says against the facts. There is when things, you know, get quiet a bit, suddenly he'll burst back into prominence and on the stage again. He has, how shall we put it, a colourful private life. He has all his failings and quirks and so on. And it is every chapter. There is an interesting tale, an interesting story. You don't have to go through, and it helps, of course, that he's not really interested in policy, apart from the Brexit issue and one or two other things. And it helps, of course, that he's never had the drudgery of years of ministerial office. But I knew it was going to be a roller coaster ride, and so it proved. It was very like a book I wrote many years ago about Geoffrey Archer. And again, in that case, there was never a dull moment in Geoffrey's life, and you always knew that anything he said had to be checked against the facts assiduously. But one of the great things I love about Farage is all the sort of contradictions and hypocrisies and paradoxes in his life. I mean, for example, Farage would have got nowhere, UKIP would have got nowhere, if it wasn't for the European Union, in the sense that in 1999, under pressure from the European Union, the then Labour government under Tony Blair brought in PR, proportional representation, for the European elections. It almost didn't happen. The House of Lords tried to block it, and eventually Blair insisted they should overrule the House of Lords, and they did. And as a result, Farage became one of the first 3 MEPs. And after that, that was the road to success. Because once you've got a party in the European Parliament, you get loads of extraordinary amounts of money and expenses and allowances and staffing. It gives you a platform, it gives you status. You're invited to appear on Question Time and on broadcast a lot more. And it really, the European Union and the European elections and having them under PR really put UKIP and Farage on their way. The other great contradiction is that Farage never actually believed, although he was committed to Brexit from the very start of the project, he never actually believed in a referendum. He thought it would be bonkers to have a referendum because they would probably lose. And his route to Brexit was actually to get a few UKIP MPs elected to Westminster and then ally with Eurosceptics in the Conservatives and in the Labour Party, and somehow or other eventually they'd get a majority and somehow or other the Parliament would vote for Brexit. I mean, it was a bonkers idea in my view, but that was what Farage actually believed. He didn't believe in a referendum. And in those days, in the early days of UKIP and the European Parliament, they campaigned against the gravy train of Europe and all the sort of high living and all the expenses and allowances that MEPs got. Well, all I can say is within a few months, nobody was better at claiming allowances and expenses and spending them than Nigel Farage and his colleagues within the European Parliament on a mega scale. And it was that money that enabled UKIP to become a political party in this country. And millions and millions of European money were devoted towards UKIP's election activities in this country. In 2004, UKIP even stood for the European Parliament on the policy that they wouldn't employ any of their spouses or girlfriends on the European payroll. Within 6 months, it was found that Mrs. Farage was on the European payroll. And over the years, there are at least 3 other of Farage's lovers that were on the European the European payroll, and I calculate there was one period where at least three of them were, and these are the ones I know about. I mean, there could well be others as well, there bound to be others. So another of the great contradictions of Farage. But the really wonderful one to me is the Farage the man of the people? Farage the man of the people. And yet, he's very proud of going to a private school, Dulwich College. He's a very assiduous old boy, turns up all the events in his striped blazer in summer. He loves campaigning in working men's clubs, but he's also a member of the East India Club. He's really annoyed that no government has ever offered him a knighthood. And he's really pissed off that no government has ever offered his party, or either of his parties, any peerages. And what is this man of the people doing having a bank account with Coutts? where supposedly the minimum deposit is £1 million, and even he had £400,000 in his deposit. So those little contradictions of his character are beautiful. And but the success of Farage basically is built on three things. One, his utter ruthlessness. He would rival Stalin or Putin in the way that he dealt with internal enemies within UKIP. People like Suzanne Evans, Douglas Carswell, Godfrey Bloom, and some of them like Godfrey, former friends of his, a former flatmate of his. Second, he's a brilliant communicator. I think the most brilliant communicator of our age, politically. There are five ways, it seems to me, a politician can communicate, and he's good at all of them. On a conference platform, in a parliamentary chamber, in a television studio, in a radio studio, and out on the street. Now, some politicians are good at some of those, but not so good at the others. I mean, Boris Johnson loves going out on the street and loves the adulation and the selfies and the autographs, but he doesn't like engaging very much with the voters about serious policy issues. Farage loves that. He loves being challenged on the street. He loves engaging with voters, and he loves all the other forms of communication. And the other thing Farage has, that very few politicians have in my view, is a sense of public opinion, what the public believes in, what the public will stand for. Not many people around have that. Tony Blair has it, in my view. Alistair Campbell, Rupert Murdoch has it. And Nigel Farage has it. As for his future, well, he's found a new role in life. He has become something we've never really seen before in this country, a public campaigner. It began with when he was on LBC and he was sort of doing a lot of social media. He was one of the first people to raise the issue of the cross-channel migrants. More later on, he tried to develop the idea of a referendum on net zero. That's not gone very far. Now, of course, is this whole banking issue, the debanking issue, which he himself, of course, has been something of a victim. And he is a brilliant broadcaster with his nightly programmes on GB News. And takes to it like a duck to water. He has wanted to be a broadcaster since his teenage years, when he used to ring in to LBC as Nigel from Bromley and take part in phoning discussions. Well, now he can do it every night. And I think that Nigel Farage, he won't be in politics anymore, but he will be in our public life. I think he's only 59, for the next 15, 20, 25 years in this role. He will be around long after, I think, David Cameron and Liz Truss and Theresa May and Rishi Sunak and Keir Starmer have long been forgotten.